Okay, I call the meeting to the Division of Long-Term Care to order. Members, please take your seats. We do not have a quorum yet, so we will move the minutes later. I'm going to call up Representative Halverson to tell us about House File 1099, and I'm going to recommend that we lay the bill over for possible inclusion in the Long-Term Care Division report. So, Representative Halverson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Appreciate you hearing House File 1099. This is a bill that appropriates money for grants for the disability waiver rate system. The grants provided to the providers that are projected to receive a reduction with regard to revenue for their disability waiver services upon the full implementation of the DWRS, which will occur on January 1st, 2020. The grant program is not permanent. It would expire in 2023. So it's a small grant program to get some providers over the hiccup with regard to the recalculation of rates. And with that, I would like you to hear less from me and more from the testifier about the impacts of this particular legislation.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record, please, and then continue.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Tom Weaver, and I'm the CEO of Achieve Services in Blaine. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. Achieve Services has been around since 1964. We currently serve over 190 adults with developmental disabilities, and we've got over 100 people on waiting lists to get into our program. We are one of the programs that is hit hardest by the DWRS changes. We stand to lose when it's fully implemented over 20% of our revenue. So on an annual basis, that's between $800,000 and $900,000. We've obviously known this has been coming for the last 5 years, and we've taken a lot of steps to try to prepare for that inevitability. We have tripled our fundraising. We've established an endowment. We've established a transition reserve. We launched a laundry detergent business that provides jobs for our people, and also hopefully this year will become profitable and give us some level of revenue. We've also done a lot of things to cut costs. We are leasing vehicles rather than purchasing them. We've partnered with New Tracks on vehicle maintenance. That's a collaboration that a couple other programs started, and we're saving a lot of money by using them. We've terminated a real estate deal that we had. So we've done a lot of things to try to cut that gap, but we've also been frustrated by some things along the way, primarily health insurance costs. We saw a 29% increase in our health insurance premiums last year, and that followed a 19% increase the year before. So while we're trying to close that gap by doing everything we can, we've also had some things that have made that much more difficult. So the DWRS, again, is fully implemented at the end of this year, and we're looking for some relief for a couple of years to help us just bridge that gap and get through this transition. And we're confident that with a couple of years funding grants and working with DHS, we can come up with a sustainable plan.
Thank you. And how many of your employees, Mr. Weaver, are eligible for health insurance?
They're all full-time employees, and we have about 72. They're all eligible for health insurance.
Are there questions from members? Representative Gruenhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, do we know what the fiscal costs will be on line 1.7 and 2.15?
Do you want to answer Representative Halverson, or would you like Doug to?
I would always defer to Mr. Berg if I can.
Mr. Berg, do you know the answer?
Madam Chair and members, the fiscal note is not signed off on yet, so I always mention to people take these with a grain of salt. It's preliminary numbers that can change. But the preliminary fiscal note shows costs of $3.64 million in the 2021 biennium and $5.62 million in the 22-23 biennium.
Okay.
Any other questions from members? Okay, hearing none, I think we're good. So the motion is to... I don't need a motion. We're just going to lay this over for possible inclusion in the long-term division report, long-term care division report. Thank you for your testimony, and on your way, Representative
Thank you,
Pelkison.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Members.
Okay. We now have a quorum. Is there a motion to move the minutes from March 4th, 2019? Representative Munson moves the minutes from March 4th, 2019. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Same sign. Okay, minutes are adopted. Passed. And members, there was a document that was passed out. This is from the Office of the Ombudsman for Long-Term Care, Cheryl Hennin. She responded to members' questions, so you should see that in on your, I think it was put on top of your deck there, so you should all have that. Okay, now Representative Grunhagen is going to take over the gavel while I present the next bill, which is House File 168.
Madam Chair, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, I would like to make a motion to lay this bill over for possible inclusion in the long-term care division report. Representative Grunhagen.
All right, Madam Chair, if you want to go ahead and explain your bill and if you have any testifiers.
I'd like to adopt the amendment, the A2 amendment.
So, Chair Schultz moves the A2 amendment. Are there any questions from members or comments? Any comments, Representative Schultz, on this amendment?
I think maybe we can get the bill in the shape, and then I'll talk through the amended bill.
Okay. It's been moved. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The amendment passes. Chair Schultz, to your amended bill.
So this is the DWRS reimbursement rate a bill that reforms some of the rates, and then I'll talk through the amendment. But just keep in mind, members, that we really have a crisis in the home care community-based service area where we have a shortage of workers. Workers are underpaid. I think there's a shortage of 6,800 direct support professional staff, and in the next few years we're going to need an additional 59,000 workers in this area. So the amendment that is now part of the bill, it defines comparable occupations for the agencies to look to see what the market wages are in comparable occupations to direct support professionals. It adds a competitive workforce factor of 4.7%. This is similar to what the governor has proposed in his budget proposal. It increases this competitive workforce factor by 2 percentage points in years 2022 and 2024. And after that, starting in 2026, the agencies will look at comparable occupations and look at the wage data and comparable occupations to the direct support professional occupations. It directs reimbursement rates to be paid as compensation in three categories, so residential, day, and unit-based services. A certain percentage of the reimbursement rate needs to go to total compensation. It then updates the rates of the competitive workforce factor, and it retains the reporting requirements. So in the long run, currently we're using BLS data, Bureau of Labor Statistics data on wages. In the long term, we'll be using self-reported wage data from the providers to get more accurate data, because the BLS data, there's a very large variation in that data every year. So we'll get more accurate data to make sure that wages reflect the market. So with that, I entertain questions from members. And I do have three testifiers today as well, Chair Grunhagen.
I think we'll have the testifiers first. Chair Schultz, and then we'll go to questions. Welcome to the committee. Please have a seat, introduce yourself, and present your testimony.
Thank you, members of the committee. My name is Judy Martyr, and I'm a parent to an adult daughter with disabilities who accesses community-based services and has since 1970. I'm also the current chair of the Best Life Alliance, a statewide coalition of more than 130 organizations. where parents, providers, and professionals committed to eliminating the disability services workforce shortage. My daughter, Carla D., is 51 years old. She's received community services since she was diagnosed with Rett syndrome at the age of 3. She's all of 4'10", weighs about 80 pounds, and she can't talk. She needs total support with dressing, hygiene, and eating, and lately even with her walking because her bones have become very fragile. She lives in a 4-person waiver home and needs 24-hour awake staff to ensure her safety and well-being. Since our state implemented the new disability waiver rate system that sets the rates that individuals receive to access these services, the Best Life Alliance has worked collaboratively each legislative session to advance reforms to the waiver rate system so that it supports Minnesotans with disabilities to live their best lives, a goal that I can only hope we all share. As a parent, I've been here a number of times over the last 10 years to ask for the same thing, competitive wages, so we can help address the severe workforce shortage in the disability community. And after all these years, it seems to me we have only gone backwards. Opportunities for Carla D. to give back to her community by shopping, eating, and volunteering with assistance from dedicated staff are declining. Quality staff are either too hard to recruit or leave after a short period of time for better paying jobs. I ask you to please support House File 168 as amended today, to the disability waiver rate system. I feel like I should just say DWRS. I think we all know that by now. I'm so certain that this is a long overdue first step that our state needs to take to continue to support my daughter, Carla D., and all Minnesotans with developmental disabilities. As much as anyone, they deserve to live their best lives with the support of valued and appropriately compensated qualified staff. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mader, for your testimony. And now the next testifier, please introduce yourself and present your testimony.
Thank you. Mr. Chairperson Grunhagen and members of the committee and Representative Schultz, my name is Jim Clapper. I'm a parent of a young man with intellectual and developmental disabilities who receives residential and employment support services today. I'm also a co-leader of a grassroots advocacy organization called Minnesota Families and Advocates Coalition, MINFAC, and also a member of Best Life Alliance. Thank you for the opportunity to provide some testimony today on the behalf of Representative Schultz Amendment and also HF 168. On behalf of 500 parents and family members and guardians who are part of MINFAC community, I want to thank this committee for your persistent and diligent attention to the disability waiver rate setting system. Without your commitment to continuing to try to strengthen the rate setting system, over 30,000 Minnesotans with intellectual and developmental disabilities who are receiving services paid through Medicaid waivers would be in great jeopardy. I've had the opportunity to talk to several hundred parents and family members about federal and state programs that support their loved ones with intellectual and developmental disabilities. A high percentage of these parents and family members are struggling to find and keep services for their loved ones due to the workforce shortage. They are frustrated with the inability of service providers to find and retain good direct care staff. Most parents and family members are having a very difficult time finding residential and day services programs for their loved ones coming from the school districts into transitions and into adult services. Many programs cannot accept new individuals because they are struggling with crisis-level staff shortages. I have talked with a few parents that are so discouraged that they pray they will outlive their loved ones with disabilities because they have lost trust in the ability for Minnesota to care for them and support them. The amended bill will provide a new factor at DWRS called the competitive workforce factor, which will help address the workforce shortage. It will also increase the frequency of scheduled updates to DWRS system from 5 years to two. These two changes to DWRS are big steps in the right direction. These will give parents and family members a new level of hope that their loved ones with IDD can access the services that are so critical to their well-being. Thank you for this opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, Mr. Clapper. Do you have any other testifiers, Chair Schultz? Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Kevin Goodnow. I am here on behalf of the Minnesota Organization for Habilitation and Rehabilitation, also, which is a member of the Best Life Alliance. So I am representing the Best Life Alliance. And I just want to express our, as the previous two testifiers mentioned, our support for the bill as amended. We particularly want to recognize Representative Schultz's leadership in addressing our concerns, but also the work of the Department of Human Services in coming up with language and an approach that I think works for all of us in addressing the goals of Representative Schultz and also the concerns of the Best Life Alliance. In particular, the reinstatement of the competitive workforce factor is key. And the level that it's set at with the analysis and the changes that take place in the future. And then also being able to find compromise language, well, I wouldn't even call it compromise language that works with us with regard to the requirement a certain amount of revenue is dedicated to compensation and benefits for those people who are the direct support professionals. So, again, I'd like to express our support for the bill and especially thank Representative Schultz and the committee for their consideration of this bill.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Goodnow. Before we go to member questions, is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify for or against this bill or with concerns? Seeing none, let's go to member questions. Anybody have any questions? Representative Mutson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question is around how the wages are going to be calculated. I was just reading through the bill. And some notes that I had earlier, it talks about a statewide labor market data that's collected, and then also there are adjustments for regional factors. Just wondering if the author could speak to, is it going to be setting wages for different roles statewide, or is it going to be based on region?
Chair Schultz.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. So the wages are not set using BLS data. It's the reimbursement rates that use those wages from the BLS data to incorporate into the framework for setting the reimbursement rates to the providers. So the wages that will get passed on to the direct support professionals will be there's guidelines for a percentage of the entire reimbursement rate going to total compensation. So the wage data will be the statewide weighted average data, depending on what type of job classification code you're in. And then there's some regional factors that I'm going to have our House research staff comment on those, if she could do that.
Ms. Daniel?
Mr. Chair and Representative Munson, there's a regional variance factor that's an adjustment sort of after the fact, kind of after the rest of the rate is calculated. DHS could probably comment more on how that works.
In the follow-up,
Representative Munson,
Mr. Chair, so we're going to be taking in this information in order to adjust the reimbursement rate with the hope that they will be raising the salaries for these workers. So what type of guarantee is there that this trickle-down economics is actually going to work within this industry? I mean, as far as ensuring that the wages are increasing?
Chair Schultz?
Mr. Chair, Representative Munson, so there's reporting requirements on the back end, so they're going to have to now start to report new data that they haven't reported in the past on wages that they're paying for workers. And then once they report that data to our state agencies, that'll be verified, and recommendations will come to our body on whether or not they're meeting those requirements. And if they're not meeting those requirements, there could be recommendations to then withhold some penalty if those wages are not being if the reimbursement rates are not being transmitted to wages.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Schultz, for bringing this forward. I had the chance to sit with three of our providers on Friday. I think you were busy in committee work. Otherwise, I'm sure we would have been there together. But I think with the addition of the amendment and all the work that's gone into it, I heard very positive support from the providers in our area. And given the workforce question, I mean, they're just trying to keep the staff they have and obviously want to be paying the wages and are going to, and I think, see the benefit in what you're doing with this amendment. So I'm glad to see this moving forward in the way it is.
Okay, I don't think there was a question there. Okay. Thank you, Representative Olson. Any other questions? I have a couple questions. Chair Schultz, we passed a 7% increase in the past. It was denied or negated by CMS. So how does this make up for the 7%? Does it go beyond the 7% increase that we had passed before, or how does that work together? And maybe Representative
Yeah, let me take a stab, and then Mr. Goodnow can help clean anything up in the agencies as well. So the 7%, the 1.5% that happened, that was initiated in 2013 to 2014, that went to providers, and then for part 23% of the providers, the CMS ruled that they would not pay that set because there was an automatic inflationary adjustment of 8.5% in 2017. So CMS ruled that stacked increase was not allowed for the non-banded providers, which is about 23% of the providers providing services. So it didn't affect those that were banded, which is the majority. And the state continued to pay part of that 7%, and then it was removed from the forecast once CMS said you could not continue paying that amount. So this helps rectify that situation by looking at competitive workforce wages to make sure, because we're setting reimbursement rates, we're artificially setting wages, and we're not letting the market determine the wages. We need to use this competitive workforce factor to adjust wages since we're artificially creating this reimbursement rate and wage market. So that's going to clarify that 7% by looking at not inflation, which wasn't allowed by CMS, but by looking at competitive wages instead. And then there's going to be inflationary adjustments instead of every 5 years, every 2 years.
So thanks for that response, Chair Schultz. So will this be, from your perspective or one of your testifiers, are we going to have a problem with CMS on this increase?
This will, thank you, Mr. Chair, this will be implemented with the approval from the federal government or in 2020, so whichever is later, I believe. So we do need to get approval for this new competitive workforce factor. But I think the agency and I are optimistic that they'll approve it, but we will have to wait and see.
Would Mr. Goodnow, do you want to add anything to that?
Nope.
Okay. Any other questions, members? Seeing none, do you want to renew your motion?
Sure. Renew my motion to lay it over for possible inclusion in the division report.
As amended. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Grunhagen for having the gavel. I think that's all the business we have for today. Next Monday, we're going to hear bills on personal territory. So we'll hear a couple bills there and possibly on some rate reformulations in another market if we can get some fiscal notes ready in time for Representative Loeffler's bills. And that's any other questions or concerns from members? No. With that, we adjourn.